Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here for this week's Know Your Foe episode. Mike Santagata. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
It's the odds makers take a beating again, but we're happy to have you here, Mike, to talk about the Bengals' huge divisional game coming up. I think that Ravens fans are probably appropriately very fearful about who this Bengals team has become.
Yeah, I think before the year, this would be circled at least on the Ravens' end as not an easy win. There's no easy wins in the NFL, but it's circled as a they're an upstart young team, but they're probably not going to challenge us, really. I mean, you look at the past few games, and the game in Baltimore last year wasn't that close, but there were moments. And then the other game, there were no moments. It was a 400-yard rushing day, and Lamar Jackson sat the fourth quarter. So yeah,
that game, you know, really struck me as the Bengals kind of gave up in the second half of that game, honestly. And one of the guys who'd been very loud before the game, Jermaine Pratt, was one of the chief guys who had really given up in that game. So kind of unfortunate for Bengals fans, although, hey, it's week 17. Who cares? but it was one of those games. Really appreciate having you on. You're from Locked On Bengals in the Cincinnati area. I want to mention that. Where can folks talk football with you on Twitter?
Find me. Everything I do is pretty much promoted on my Twitter, just Bengals_Sands. And you'll find me there and anything I do.
All right, fantastic. So let's get right to this. Want to talk about the Bengals and their off-season moves in particular. Start with the biggest moves, and then we'll move from there to go to the draft and whatnot.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Who the biggest acquisitions in this off-season?
Okay, biggest acquisitions. The first one that comes to mind is Chidobe Awuzie. He's having a career year in Cincinnati. This is probably his first time having what I think is good safety help behind him with Jesse Bates and Von Bell too. But in Dallas, I don't think he really got that. I think he was left more on the island than he should have been. Having a career year, he just this last week showed really high level play. He was in a cover two and he was sinking with eyes on number two, sinking back vertically because nobody's breaking out. And he makes this fantastic play on the ball, just one hand jumping into the air. It's the Lions, so you think like it's the Lions, but then the week before he's shadowing Devontae Adams for a little bit of the game and only gave up, I think, 80 of the yards, and they were tough yards, and he got an interception. So, I mean, against possibly the best receiver in the league, that's something I would take. For the other guys, Larry Ogunjobi's playing a lot of snaps. He's up and down, but I like what I've seen from him. He does a good job with his get off and disrupting plays that way. B.J. Hill in a trade as well along the interior.
So he'll a good player. Ogunjobi killed the Ravens, and I we've had Browns guys on talking about him before, and they say it's the only team he plays well against. But Ogunjobi absolutely killed the Ravens over the years in terms of being in the backfield a lot. And I'm not sure exactly why it was that he was such a tough matchup for the Ravens to handle. But even in the game they won at the beginning of last year, where the Browns line really played very well on both sides, Ogunjobi was a force in that one, despite the fact that it was a one-sided football game. The Ravens won 38-6, but he's very effective.
Yeah, and I think that week Pro Football Focus had him probably, I think, the defensive line or defensive tackle on their weekly All-Pro type thing. And I mean, I've watched that, and really it's similar to what he does when he does well. He has a great get off. He's hard to block. He's strong. Just everything like that. And sometimes he can't time up the snaps as well, and his get off suffers from that. But he plays, and he plays hard. He's a strong force on the interior.
Let's move on to the draft and talk a little bit about that. And, do you have an early read on this draft class other than Jamar?
Well, Jamar's the easy one. He's doing pretty well. Other than that, Jackson Carman, he's a second round pick. He's had his struggles, but he's never been in my opinion, I don't think he's had an abysmal game where he's destroyed the game like single-handedly from the right guard spot. And he's moving from left tackle to right guard, and he had back surgery in the offseason. So a lot of this can make sense. You can make sense of it at least. But this past week, he had a great game. Got sick. He puked on the field, but he played through.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So he had to be replaced at some point after that. But before that, he was having a really good game.
I just want to mention about Carmen that he was a guy I really loved. And this was a class with a lot of very short-armed tackles. A lot of guys with, you know, low 33s and even into the 32s on arm lengths, and very few guys who were 34 and up. And Carmen was a guy that I really liked as a guy moving to guard that would be one of the best guards in the entire class. I might have had him number two on a list of guards, and my number three guy, I believe, I recall correctly, was Cleveland. So, it's high praise, frankly, to have him. Because there are a lot of guys at both tackle and guard who really projected to guard in the NFL.
Yeah, and you even think of the top guys where Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater both had those short arms too. I think Darisaw had good arms, but then after that, I mean, it was like everybody was 33 to 34, but nobody was 34 and up, and that was just crazy to me.
Yeah, only the developmental tackles were the only guys who were really long-armed, the Stone Forsythe and the Northern Iowa guy whose name is Spencer Brown.
Yeah.
All right, well, the rest of the game, Cameron Sample, a guy I looked at when he was playing at Tulane, playing on the opposite side from somebody else who was drafted last year who I'm forgetting right now. But Cameron Sample definitely popped on the tape.
He's popping a little bit in the NFL tape, too. He's rotational, and they seem to use him. They like him tight to the line. They don't line him up in like a wide nine technique. He's like a heavy five or whatever you want to call that, or he's even inside at three technique. But he's done a good job. He's gotten pressure. He looks like a pretty good pick so far. I wouldn't say a slam dunk like Jamar was, but, I mean, it's also the fourth round when you're picking Cam Sample. You're not picking him number five overall.
Great value.
Yeah. Fifth round pick was Evan McPherson. There was a debate whether that was a great value because he's a kicker, but he's got a really strong leg. He hit one from, I think it was 55, and it looked good from about 65. Not even close to the crossbar. Clean, hit the net and everything. And even on the kicks he missed in Green Bay against, there was that wind where Mason Crosby missed almost all his kicks too. They were up there. Like, he hit the flag, the wind flag on one of them, which people were saying they've never seen before, to hit the wind flag while it's flying. And another one, I think it went right over the right crossbar, and he's got the leg. It's just, he's got to get used to playing up north. He's from Florida, and before that, I think he's from Alabama. So not as many windy, cold things down there.
Has there ever been talk about building Cincinnati a dome stadium? It's just with Burrow and with a high fly and fast offense, the wind in Cincinnati being what it is. Would you want to give Burrow that advantage?
Whew. Well, you have to have the debate with Mike Brown about spending money because he doesn't even have an indoor practice facility.
Right. I mean, I've thought, particularly given Lamar's struggles in the playoffs, that it would be a great investment for Baltimore. It's really almost too late because it'll be 4 years before the thing is built if they started today, you know, kind of thing. Or if they got the approval process started today, but Lamar and Tucker would still have some years left, presumably after that, and could benefit from having a more windless environment to work in. That'd be good. But I would think for Joe Burrow in particular, it's something you would think about with a young team and a track meet offense, that a dome facility would really help them.
I think so too. I think definitely in a vacuum, I'd be wanting to build a dome stadium because you don't want snow to come down and ruin the possible day you'd have. They play the Browns late in the year. I mean, who are you taking run game wise? The Browns, possibly the best in the league. Or I don't think the Bengals run game's bad, but I don't want to match up against that for 60 minutes of a game. I'd rather be able to throw against them. Mm-hmm. So that all makes sense. Lastly, the seventh round pick, he got hurt, so he's IR. But sixth round pick, Chris Evans, got extended playing time this past week and looked really good. He's a backup running back. I think he's going to be the second running back now, especially on third downs behind Mixon. He had a play last week where a linebacker lined up over him outside. The Bengals love empty, so you're going to put your running back way outside for easy man zone indicator type thing where linebacker on you, man. Corner zone.
Got it.
Linebacker lined up over him. He releases outside, but just to make sure he beats him, he takes this hard jab step inside and then flies upfield. He's running a go route, and the linebacker, instant separation, like 4 yards, instant separation, 25-yard touchdown, one of the easiest throws Burrow's probably had to make this year for a touchdown. Love to see that. And then what I love to see is that he took somebody in pass protection. Got a fake handoff and knocked this guy completely out of the pocket and gave Burrow time to make a 50-yard throw to Ja'Marr Chase. So not only showing up in the stats, but showing up on film too, doing the things that not every young running back has to do. So that was encouraging to see.
That's definitely a very big positive. We love our blocking running backs, and we love more of that. We love our blocking wide receivers in Baltimore. So it's a big deal for us. Key injuries now. Now, we know Joseph Asai has not played yet this year. What's the long-term prognosis for him?
Yeah, I kind of skipped over that. He's on IR. He's out for this year. I think it was a meniscus tear, and he had it repaired. So that was the issue. He also had an injury, I think, to his arm as well in that game. He was having a great preseason game, but preseason, you know, means so much. But he looks so good. And then he comes out and he's got two injuries and he's done for the year. And it's, oh no, but I think you'll be fine. I think the reason you get the meniscus repairman is because you could just get that cleaned up and keep playing. A lot of guys do that. You miss about 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and you can play the rest of the season. But he got it repaired because long-term he wants to be right and not have this come up again, or the very small chance that your meniscus tear turns into, I don't know, arthritic type things that ends some guys' careers.
Sure. Another guy, you know, terrific value where he's drafted. I thought I liked him a lot. Long run cap situation. Let's talk about this, because all of the other teams in the division, obviously the Steelers are at the beginning of a cap purge right now with the end of Roethlisberger's career, but the Bengals and Ravens are about to sign their quarterbacks long term, and obviously each of them are in much more difficult cap situations in the coming years. How do the Bengals look?
Yeah, like most teams, I think when you have a guy you think is your franchise quarterback, you kind of design your contracts around that. So a lot of these deals, Chidobe Awuzie, Mike Hilton, all these deals seem to end the year of or the year before that Burrow would get his big extension, or at least the money for that would kick in. That usually kicks in next year. So it shouldn't hamper them too much right in the immediate future. But I mean, once you sign that quarterback, that's so much cap going to him, and you have to start making things work. As of now, I think it's all right. They're going to have to sign Jesse Bates. Hopefully, at least they don't let him go. And then
who are the cornerstone players other than Bates and Burrow? Who else do you want to see as cornerstone players in Cincinnati?
I would say Ja'Marr Chase so far, definitely having a fantastic rookie year. Something with those LSU guys. Justin Jefferson had a similar year last year. I would look to they kind of made Joe Mixon a cornerstone, but I think running back shelf life, by the time Burrow's on for his new deal, I don't think he'll be thought of the same, even if he's still with the team. T. Higgins had a very good rookie year. I think he's worth looking at like that. Logan Wilson's having a breakout year. That's one you have to look for going forward.
Exactly the two guys I was going to ask about. Logan Wilson had killed the Ravens, obviously, last year. Was very effective when he played them. A guy who really would have been a better draft value than Queen for the Ravens. You're probably aware of just how badly Queen has played this year, but boy, it has not been pretty.
I think it's one of those things where Patrick Queen, he's really young, and the NFL game moves so fast. Like Logan Wilson, I think, is 2 years older than him. So when you look at it that way, it's Well, there's definitely still hope. I mean, he's such an athlete, so good at the position when he was in college, that the NFL game just moves so fast and you have to make these reads, everything going on. Luckily, he doesn't have to play Baltimore, which I think is one of the toughest games for a linebacker, seeing all those guards pulling and trying to keep up with the quarterback. But I definitely think there's hope. There was a play last week against the Chargers. I watched a little bit of the defense, and a guard came up to block. He just knocked him flat down. Didn't do anything super great on the play, like make the tackle, force a fumble, but it's just one of those things you see, you're like, oh, this guy is, he's still oozing talent. It's just, he hasn't put it together yet.
Yeah, shedding blocks is really a big thing he's got to learn how to do, and they've got him now an on-field handler. Maybe worth talking for just a second about Josh Vines, who's back at the Ravens and threatening for the second time in 3 years to bail out the defense. The 2019 defense, all sorts of problems with Owosso as the signal caller early in that season. They brought in Josh Bynes. He didn't take over signal calling, but he did kind of automatically take over a field generalship for the front seven, where Clark is the signal caller. And his stabilizing role in that in 19 just immediately turned the Ravens defense around. I was very sad, even with the draft picks, that they didn't re-sign him, particularly how cheaply the Bengals got him. I don't know if you're particularly, you know, elated with how he played for the Bengals in 2020, but he's back here, and his game speed is half a second quicker than either Queen or Board on a consistent basis.
I really liked him in Cincinnati. I thought he definitely had the experience, veteran presence of knowing what's going on, and in a room of guys that were first and second year guys, that's sorely needed. And great leadership. Every time he gave a quote, it was always something like, man, I want to play with that guy. I really liked him. I was kind of sad to see him go, but at the same time, you need to get Logan Wilson and the young guys these snaps, and Josh Vines probably wants to play too. So it makes sense that he's going to go somewhere with maybe a slightly larger chance of some playing time. And I mean, I'm glad to hear he's playing well for you guys. I like him.
He accepted a practice squad deal with the Ravens, so it wasn't immediate or anything, but the inside linebacker play was so awful that, you know, he's all of a sudden he's on the team, and he started this last week, played every single base and nickel package. So he's got a job, and the other guys have to fit his job around them, and is what the situation is now in Baltimore. And honestly, it's a big step backward for the draft picks in the 2020 class that this has occurred. So we are where we are.
Well, you got the steal of, was it the 2018 draft with Lamar at 32? So
yeah, thanks.
Getting that's awesome.
You don't have to feel sorry for us. It's okay. It's part of the show. Let's move on to Joe Burrow, because obviously he's the heart and soul of whatever the Bengals' success is going to be. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing in his game that maybe is different this year, and what his strengths and weaknesses are.
What you think of with young quarterbacks, and just young players in specific, is that they're going to get by on mostly physical traits type things, and they'll get the mental game as they go along. But with Burrow, I mean, no beating around the bush, it's all over Twitter that his arm strength isn't like elite. It's fine. I think he's franchise quarterback level, but it's not. If he sees a late dig, he can't Matt Stafford the ball in there if he's late on it, you know? But what he works around that with is his ability to process really quickly. He does a great job pre-snap. That's why they love him in empty, to get easy reads and do stuff off of that. He has full control at the line to make run pass kills or audibles that are into different plays that weren't even called, like the documented wide receiver screen, or, well, tight end screen. It was a perimeter screen, and CJ Uzoma was on the other end. That was just a Burrow saw cover zero, and he audibled into a screen along the perimeter. Mental game is really what I see that picks up really quick, and there's still room to grow. He still makes a mistake here and there. He's a young guy, but it's just he's miles ahead of where you would think a rookie, or not rookie, but second-year quarterback would be at the stage.
Yeah, he's played less than 16 games. We can still call him a rookie if you want to in that case. And the processing speed is very evident. It's something that, there's a degree of jealousy, I think, in anybody who has a quarterback who has maybe just a tad less processing speed, even though I love Lamar. Lamar reads leverage like nobody else, but his ability to change plays at the line of scrimmage and do different things, that's not really what he does. He changes plays during the play. So by doing it by either pulling the ball or not, for example. But Burrow's certainly a great young quarterback. Can you take us through the current state of the offensive line? That was obviously a problem for the Bengals in the first meeting last year, in terms of not being able to keep the Ravens out of the backfield.
I didn't mention him, but I feel like I probably should have as a franchise cornerstone, but Jonah Williams looks like a good young left tackle, especially in pass protection. I think PFF charted him with, I think, four or so pressures so far in the year. Now, I think some of that is Burrow gets the ball out insanely quickly because it's quick processing, but you look at the other guy on the list is Tyron Smith, and who is his quarterback? Dak Prescott with his insanely quick processing. So he's a guy I really like. He gained some weight. Still struggling a little bit in the run game, especially solo. Could be long arms, his short arms. We were talking about that earlier. He's, I think, just at 34. And for some guys, that's not long enough, or maybe it's 33 and like 6/8. Or, well, I guess that'd be 3/4. But to me, franchise cornerstone left tackle. And I think he's solid where he is. When you're an offense like the Bengals, that's, you want the pass blocking and you can take the run blocking. Quentin Spain next to him. Journeyman, but having a resurgence just this past week. He's clearing guys. He does such a good job with his awareness, and older players, so this makes sense, but his awareness to see something's going wrong and I'm not covered or I'm not blocking anybody in pass protection, let me go pick that guy up. Let me find work. He's always trying to do stuff like that, and he's heck of a finisher too. He'll drive guys into the ground. Next to him is Trey Hopkins. And if you remember last year, week 17, Trey Hopkins tore his ACL, and he was out there week one for the Bengals. But it feels like maybe he came back early because he doesn't look the same, just a little bit less power. He was never that powerful in the first place. So it shows when he's trying to sustain and trying to anchor in against bull rushes. And he's a little slower off the ball, it seems. And all of this just contributes into him having a poor year. Still, I think, in my opinion, has the mind that you need at center. And really, you just keep hoping that he's going to get everything else back as time goes on.
Two things come to mind in what you said about guard and center here. In Quentin Spain, of course, we've known with Buffalo, and he's been around the league. But have the other teams been running games in that left A gap? Or the left B gap, for that matter, to try and get to Burrow?
Yeah, plenty. But the thing is that the only two guys that can consistently pass off these games are Jonah Williams and Quentin Spain. The other side of the line is really where you'd probably want to run those. Even if Riley Reiff is a veteran, the guy next to him is a rookie. Mm-hmm. So easily susceptible to that stuff. And that sometimes it even works on the left side. There's a play with Khalil Mack and Robert Quinn. They ran a game that was successful along the left side, and they try to get through the A gap, but especially in empty, what it seems like they're trying to do is really just gum all that up when they need to. Like, we're going to full slide. We'll just full slide it. And I think this might be a reaction to what Baltimore did to them, where, look, even if four guys come, at least it'll be the end. It won't be somebody down the middle, which is the worst type of pressure. So they've
shown a good ability to react to double A gap look to be able to say we know how to attack that and gum that up.
On and off. I mentioned the full slide. That was something used last week, but I mean, there still are moments where they get in double A gap and Mixon is, maybe they move the back up right over a linebacker. So back's probably taking that linebacker. I think to me, now this could be different. A sniffer to me is when the tight end is off the line and just like either lined up perfectly with a tackle or just inside him. Where I think of this is just, I don't know what to call it. I haven't heard the name, but it's just motioning, moving your back up into the line so the linebacker doesn't get a full head of steam before they take him on. Let him take him up the line.
I don't want to go back too far historically, but the terrible play and the great play, no doubt, from the Bengals history where Boyd got the 49-yard touchdown on fourth and 12, I guess it was. that had one of the key things was Dalton moved 25.
Gio. Giovanni Bernard.
Yeah, up, right over guard to be what I thought was called a sniffer position, and to more quickly deal with things. And the Ravens tried to run an off defense that they didn't use at all, trying to invert Weddle, was basically going to have to come down and cover Bernard, who'd have been a hell of a tough out anyway. If you throw 8 yards to Giovanni Bernard and then ask Weddle to make that tackle or 6 yards, I mean, I think that's a really tough ask of Weddle anyway. But anyway, rather than give up the first down, they gave up the touchdown, of course, and that was that. So
yeah, felt like a play that sprung Tyler Boyd's career, because before that, I mean, he was like a 400-yard guy, and then that play happens. The next year, he's 1,000 yards. It's like he got the confidence.
Yeah, one of the best slot receivers in the league, certainly. So that that was good. Take us. I'm sorry, I interrupted you on the offensive line. Let's continue there.
That's okay. I'll always go down that memory lane. right guard. Right now, Jackson Carman should be expected, even if he was sick last week. I'm sure he's fine now. It sounds like it might have been food poisoning. Which, funny story with that is that he sent out a tweet that was, "Anybody have any good restaurants in Detroit?"
after he threw up.
No, it was before he threw up. So somebody put it together. It was like he asked for good restaurant recommendations, and the next thing he's throwing up on the field.
Where was it that you ate? You know, that's classic. Somebody's got to put that two together. Did somebody had the picture of him throwing up? Yeah. And next to him. You know, I'm not a big fan of memes, but that's hilarious.
So yeah, he had a great game this past week, in my opinion. He had a nice pancake on wide zone, and I'm sure we'll get into that later, that the Bengals like using that play, but he took the guy, threw him into the ground, and that's what you want to see from, because when I watched him in college, the thing that stood out to me was just when he throws his hands, how much power those things had. They were, I mean, like, I don't know what to call them, like Hulk strikes, like Hulk gloves. It's like he had those on where he hit a guy, they're moving a gap. It's uncanny, his punch power. And that was one of the first moments I saw where it's like, oh, he really got that guy and then just finished him into the ground. So it's kind of coming together, but you move a left tackle to right guard, there's things that happen.
Is that wide zone scheme giving him more opportunities to get to the body than he might normally have versus a defensive tackle who's thinking, or defensive end for that matter, who's thinking one arm's longer than two when he's going at him straight up?
I think when he gets to be able to be set up by somebody that helps, mm-hmm. I think sometimes, now they're not going to long arm him really from in a wide zone scheme. I haven't seen it. That'd be an impressive play to be able to get some guys moving like that. But it helps. But I think what really helps is when he can get it set up, and whether that's through motion or from Riley Reiff or Trey Hopkins giving the little stiff arm combo type thing, to set him up, and then he's able to come in and just use his athleticism and power to drive a guy. So it helps. And then there's moments where he's asked to solo block a two technique right over top of him, or a really, really tight three. And I mean, that guy can, no full head of steam. He can probably get into his chest. That's been an issue. And Carmen's been missing his hand placement. Young offensive linemen, they miss their hand placement, it seems, often. And he's doing that, and they end up on the outside. So it does and it doesn't help, like most things. Right. Like,
let's see. We need to keep the show moving a little bit. I apologize for pushing you on here, but Riley Reiff at right tackle. Any new things about him? Where he is? Is he career wise?
No, he's the same guy he kind of was in Minnesota. Solid, but not somebody that I think defensive coordinators are scared to face, even about sending their best edge rusher over him. But at the same time, for the Bengals, it's, this guy's not a liability. He's not going to sprint downfield and knock out a linebacker and lead the way that way, but he'll do a pretty good job with his body positioning, and he's a veteran that has seen a lot and doesn't make any mental mistakes.
All right. Outstanding stuff. Now, I thought everybody's interested in hearing about the Bengals wide receivers, perennial strength of the team. Tell us about him.
So starting with Ja'Marr Chase, I assume I would call him probably the X of their team, but that's really fluid with the NFL now. Those guys move all over. His best stuff is deep. anything deep. He can change his speeds. He has that third gear that sometimes people talk about where they're side by side and the ball's in the air and he just starts going faster. It's like, as a corner, what are you supposed to do? Where the guy just speeds past and he's got an extra gear that you don't have. He's got that in him. And Burrow, I mean, has the chemistry and knowledge that this is in him, because he'll put up the ball when the cornerback is ahead of him or when they're even. He'll still put it up there and he knows my guy's got it. It's not really a contested catch when you can make that late separation. Great job tracking the ball, things like that. He's got surprisingly good, and I mean, I thought this in college was yards after catch ability.
Sorry about that. I apologize for the technical difficulty there. Part of this was me being muted on the thing. So, which, by the way, if you've listened to the show, you hear that happening from time to time. Joe Burrow, the question was, Joe Burrow, does he outthrow the defensive back as a routine practice in terms of completing passes to his own wide receivers, knowing full well that they have that extra gear to run under them?
Yeah, I would say specifically with Chase, I mean, it's happened often. When they see him singled up and the cornerback is in press, and whether or not they're going to try to press man jam him or they're going to try to press bail, once he sees that, that's his first read. And especially if it's bail, where they've got their butt to the sideline and trying to scoot back that way, he's putting it up there and lets his guy run underneath it. Just something nice to see with the two of them, really. The late separation and the chemistry from Burrow to know that's there, to put balls up when even the cornerback has great position. He just knows his guy's going to go get it. So it helps helps create explosive plays when you have a wide receiver that can do things like that. And like I mentioned, his yards after catch ability is kind of surprising, but I thought I saw that in college too, where his legs are just so strong. He's just he's built like a running back. Mm-hmm. And he can just run through contact. So when defenders, especially cornerbacks who don't love to tackle, that's not Baltimore with Marlon Humphrey or Jimmy Smith, but when you get cornerbacks that don't like to tackle, he'll run right through that tackle. You really have to actually make a good tackle against him. He's not the type to go down on first contact, any of that. He'll try to run through it. Thinks every play is probably going to be a touchdown.
Okay. Like a little A.J. Brownness after the catch in terms of that. So
A little bit. I think A.J. is, he's really, really good at that.
So you take us through the other receivers you can. T. Higgins, obviously a guy I really loved, but where is he now developmentally with Chase coming along?
Yeah, you think he's taking the next step. Maybe he would have been the guy to have this big breakout year two. He got injured. Early in the year, he looked like there was an extra thing to his game. He improved his route running. He was running the blaze out, which is, you know, post and then out, a hard cut. He ran that twice against Minnesota, and then I saw it again this against Green Bay. But overall, it's just he's had a few drops. He's had the injury. He's had things like that, and Jamar Chase is a downfield threat, so he's making all the explosive plays to move the offense, where T. Higgins is more intermediate, and he's their guy on isolation routes, which mm-hmm. I just talked about. Blaze out is one of those isolation routes, but when they want anything to, we're singling up our guy against this guy, and we're going to let him route run or try to catch the ball over him for the first down, that's usually T. Higgins. Long, strong, has good hands, even if he had a few drops this year. I think he catches the ball away from his body really well. But you haven't seen just enough. I guess it could be the volume, but he's getting some targets. He's just not – him and Jamar get about the same targets, but Jamar's downfield, so the volume stats don't carry with it. I think he's as good or better than last year, but the stats, I don't know if they've shown that. But, I mean, the film to me says more. With Tyler Boyd, you have one of the best slot receivers in the league. He's so quick change of direction. They love using the Hoss-wide juke play with him on the juke route, where he can sit if he wants or leverage from the linebackers or whoever's covering him. He can run away, and he really just sauces on those to me. He'll sit, look outside, run inside, things like that. And when linebackers match up, it puts him in all sorts of fits. They don't like to move. They don't like to try to cover a guy that can move like that, I don't think. And great hands with him, reliable. He's a guy on third downs I'd look for, especially third and medium, third and short. If they're going to throw the ball, I'd look Tyler Boyd's way, at least pre-snap. I'd look there to see, like, how's he being covered? And if it's one-on-one, especially with a linebacker, I'm definitely going to probably throw this ball over there and get him on some type of – just talk about isolation routes with T. It's kind of an isolation route to run the juke and let him do whatever he wants. So quick change of direction, still a solid receiver. It's just volume's not there with the pecking order now being these young guys coming up in the league. So talent's still there, volume, whatever. He's still making first downs. He's still doing his thing. Not somebody you can forget about.
All right. How about tight end position?
CJ Uzomah had the Achilles tear last year, which to me was fearful that he's mostly known for athleticism. And was the Achilles tear do? It kind of saps that away. But he's looked the same. Modern medicine kind of making the Achilles tear. If you can do the rehab and you have the genetics for it, you could recover from this and be just as good athletically as you used to be, because he's still fast, he's still strong. He's, well, I guess it wouldn't take away from his strength as much, but looks good. But he's not a guy that you have to be fearful of a safety matching up with, like a Mark Andrews, where if Von Bell matches up with Mark Andrews, I have a little bit of a, oh boy, this might not go well. Whereas if Chuck Clark is going to match up with CJ Uzomah, I would think the Ravens think, like, okay, that shouldn't be at least a downfield issue. Maybe he misses a tackle and becomes an issue, but he should be able to keep him in front of him. But good hands. Like all of them, I think they all have pretty good hands. Athletic. And he's a guy, it felt like the Jaguars didn't care to cover, and he ended up going for two touchdowns. So you gotta factor in all these guys. They go empty for a reason. They want all these guys in space and one-on-one, and you able to utilize their talent. So they all have talent, even the tight end.
All right. Well, yeah, certainly lots of weapons to go to. Now, Joe Mixon still around. What kind of snap percentage is he getting this year? I know that was his workload was a issue in past years.
Yeah, it's up. It's not 90%, but I would say probably around 70, 75, depending on the game.
Okay, so less this year. In terms of what you're seeing from his run, or anything different this year?
No, same guy. Really good vision and pre-line of scrimmage, pre-cut ability, and pretty good after that. But really where he shines is making guys miss in the backfield before he even makes the cut or right after. So he's similar guy, strong, and utilize about the same, especially running the ball. He gets a little bit more receiving work.
All right, let's talk scheme a little bit. One thing I always like to know is, do they run? We like to run out of 21, 11, or 12 most of the time. It always seemed to me in the past the Bengals were a very strong 11 team. You talking about spread a little bit makes me wonder if they really play some 10 this year.
No, it's almost all 11 still. When they really want to get heavy, they'll come 12, 13. They don't even have what I would consider a fullback on the roster. They just move Uzomah back there if they want to get an I formation. So it's mostly 11 personnel. They get an empty from 11.
Okay. Empty from 11. And you said the running back usually on the edge of such formations when they do run a 11 spread.
Yeah. On and off though, because sometimes they'll attach the running back and tight end to the line so they can give chip help. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times when they go 3x2 spread or even 4x1, he's not going to be the one in that situation, but he's all the way outside for the man zone indication. So why you want to get into empty with a running back is who matches up over him and make things easy.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. The Ravens obviously have very significant weaknesses at inside linebacker in these first six games. How would you expect the Bengals to attack that?
Well, it's going to depend on what the Ravens do. It felt like defensively they weren't, at least against the Chargers, didn't run as much cover zero man as I had previously seen with Wink Martindale, which still means they run it, but it's not nearly every third down. What I would think to attack it is if they are going to play too high, use the Hoss-Y juke with Tyler Boyd and let him try to run away from one of those linebackers. And if they're not play, if they're playing one high, then you're going to want to use halfbacks and tight ends to try to. I would still use the passing game. I would just use the passing game and try to isolate those guys in space.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it's definitely been a case where a lot of screen yardage has been given up. I'm kind of hoping Josh Vines turns that around because of huge recognition issues, but more seriously, enormous. I dare say a lack of confidence about contact from Patrick Queen has been a real concern, that he doesn't look like he wants to make tackles. And it's kind of a basic characteristic of an inside linebacker you need. Last year, it was all about what he didn't do as a pass coverage guy. This year, it's much more about, you know, he was a bad tackler last year, and he's a bad tackler this year, but he's even worse. And it's the tackles he's not involved in, that he's not sticking his head in the pile, that are even more concerning, because those aren't showing up on the stat sheet, but they're still quite bad. So I'm fearful that the Bengals have a big day with yards after the catch from all receivers, but from the backfield in particular.
And they'll run throwback screens and stuff to the running back or the tight end. So it is something that he's going to have to get through the screen block and try to make a play on Joe Mixon or CJ Uzomah, who are both pretty strong guys, and they'll invite the contact. Mm-hmm.
Outstanding. Okay, let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. The most important question is always, how do the Bengals line up in pass defense? On third down, these high leverage plays, third and five plus, let's say, what are they looking to show you if you're in kind of a standard 11 personnel look, which is what the Ravens will pretty much always be in on those kind of downs?
Yeah, it varies a bit, but for my money, I think I would bet if it was just any one third down and I was going to try to guess before they did anything, I would be looking for, I think, too high pre-snap and whether they're going to roll down into, I mean, short yard is going to be man coverage because third and short, that's man coverage most of the time, but they'll try to roll Jesse Bates down into a robber sometimes. Sometimes let him play deep and try to jump things. And they've dabbled a little bit more in the split safety stuff, quarters and cover two, which they use against the Ravens, but they don't. It was about 70% single high last year, and this season it's been much more around 50-50. So third and medium, third and long, they'll play some cover two, let it go in front of them. And this year, Lou Anarumo has really started the pressure designs to just run straight at him with cover zero or sometimes man free cover one with five rushing. Doesn't mind sending the heat, and some of that is having Mike Hilton now, and some of it is, hey, Von Bell's good at that too.
So don't a slot corner or a safety, either one, a fair amount of blitzing there. Do they usually drop somebody? Do they drop an edge rusher to short zone when they do that?
Sometimes, but I wouldn't say usually. I would say most of the time when those guys come, it seems like they're sending at least five, which sometimes you still drop a guy for a fire zone, but usually they're sending six and saying, we're going to get home. And if you get this ball out, you're probably getting hit. And if you don't, it's going to be a sack.
Right. Okay. Let's take some time talking about the front five in particular and how they rotate them. I mean, I want you to go across the front five and tell us, you know, who those are. Actually, front five, they play a 4-3, not a 3-4, right?
Well, they actually play a 3-4 most of the time, but I would expect against the Ravens they're going to play the 4-3 because every year since Lou Anarumo's been here, he's 3-4 base, 4-2 nickel, but against the Ravens, he likes to get 4-3 and try to get his safeties into the fit and try to have as many guys as possible flowing and not on the line, probably to counteract some of the option stuff.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm really most interested in hearing, and particularly for 4-3 teams, is that I think they tend to overplay their interior guys. They can overplay their edge guys too, but they tend to play not as rotationally as a team like the Ravens almost demands you do because of the probability that you're going to have a lot of defensive snaps and a lot of run snaps that they're going to expose you to over the course of a game.
Yeah, they've been doing a good job rotation-wise, especially on the interior, just because they have guys now. They have four deep, and any of them can play nose, any of them can play three tech. even Reader can play three tech. He dropped some weight. But they'll rotate those guys, and I would think the snaps will be even lower in the 4-3 because those guys aren't going to be playing five technique, seven, anywhere outside of the tackle. So I would expect base down Reader is probably going to be the nose, and we haven't seen whether it'll be BJ Hill or Larry Ogunjobi, but one of those two will be the three tech opposite him, and it'll be a heavy rotation where I don't think either one will even hit. I don't even know if they'll hit 50% because they'll be rotating in Josh Tupou, and Cam Sample will play some snaps there as well.
I think you took us through some of the players there. Let's hear all of them in terms of who's on the defensive line. Geno Atkins situation?
He is a free agent.
He is currently not signed, right?
Yeah, not signed anywhere. He's had some looks, but nobody's signed him.
Mm-hmm. Last year, how did he play?
Last year, he hardly played. It felt like he was a free agent last year for the most part, although he had a pressure against Baltimore specifically, so I remember that. And they played him at one tech on pass rushdowns, which is a weird spot for him, but if he gets a hold of a center, he's still got the good low center of gravity and strength to bully him if he gets singled up one-on-one. He's gone.
Kind of feels like an early end to a great career there if he's really done now.
Yeah, all decade, everything. He was the pro's pro. And then he falls out of favor in Cincinnati, and it was injury, it seemed like here. He's trying to play through an injury but never fully got healthy. And then I don't know if that's been why nobody has signed him, but it seems like he makes visits, but he's one of those guys they don't sign. I still think he has juice and can be used, especially as a pass rush rotational piece.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. I mean, obviously there's some team out there that I would think needs a player like that down the stretch. So maybe he still gets signed, but this is a weird year, you know, with the COVID cap, nobody has cap to spend. In fact, I don't know if you're aware of this, but the Ravens have been not even keeping 53 on the roster because they can pay the player less on the practice squad. And seriously, this is how ridiculous it's gotten. And they only have a couple million of total cap, which would let them bring in, you know, a couple of guys, but they can't waste these last few precious dollars of cap they have. It's that tight now this year. So a lot of teams going through this, but the teams with injuries in particular who have to pay those IR guys, it's a much tougher stretch for them with the COVID cap.
Yeah, nobody, I don't think anybody's more injured than the Ravens. So it's really tough on that. Bengals actually have some cap space. They always keep cap space. Even in the COVID cap year, they have enough space to, if they wanted to sign Whitney Merciless, just signed with the Packers, but if they wanted to sign him, then they could have.
It's interesting because this is an awesome opportunity to use some cap to effectively buy some draft picks. So you can, if you want to trade for another team's player, and you know, a couple things can happen. You can accept a player they don't want under contract for the rest of the year, give them, you know, $4 million of cap on some guy who is in the last year of his deal that they really don't want to have around anymore. And, you know, you might be able to get a third round draft pick for that. If you're willing to bail out another team, maybe it's probably not a third, probably a fourth, but still something good. And I would wonder, has Mike Brown done many of those kind of deals? I know Cleveland had a famous one a few years ago where they basically traded about $14 million of cap for a second round pick.
No. And the Mike Brown and the acting GM Duke Tobin, they kind of don't love trades, especially trading players for draft picks or things like that. Now, I think they might be into that idea. I'm not sure if they would explore it. They never have done anything like that. That's like the NBA always does things like that. But the only one I really remember is just that trade for Brock Osweiler where they took on the cap space and got the draft pick. Bengals traded Billy Price for BJ Hill in a draft pick, but I don't think that was a cap thing. I think that was the Giants needed help.
Yeah. Billy Price kind of worn out his welcome, I guess, in Cincinnati after not really panning out as a number one.
Yeah, always was a good locker room guy, and he was the first guy to give somebody high five on the sideline, but he is those really, really short arms. I think they were near 31. Mm-hmm. So that really, he just had such an issue with that. And especially at guard, when he could get one-on-one with a guy with long arms that just always struggled and never found his calling in Cincinnati. but good guy. I hope he does well somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ravens have some now a fair number of short-armed interior linemen, and they're really having to try to fit them in and figure out what they do. But one of them is Patrick McCary, and he's now playing right tackle. I'm amazed, but he's been playing very well for the Ravens these last few weeks. So we'll see how that works out. Take us through the linebackers again. We're always interested in hearing about Logan Wilson, but the off-ball linebackers now I'm talking about.
So Trey Hendrickson, big signing especially for the Bengals. So sign a guy that high profile and big contract, having a good year. I would be surprised if he doesn't hit double digit sacks. And he's been the only really consistent pressure piece on the defensive line, on the front, especially when they only send four. On the other side, Sam Hubbard got his deal. He's not a pass rush guy. He's a run stopper. And this is the game where Sam Hubbard's supposed to make his money, because I think he's really good at that surf technique stuff where he's going to unblock, but he's not going to squeeze down too far. He's not going to pop out too far. He's going to force a tough read. And then if Lamar keeps it, he'll make a play.
They don't use the outside run read out of the pistol very much anymore. So Hubbard would have to be the guy, and they haven't, honestly, no team's really found the answer for this yet, but Lamar runs up the middle now more than anything else. I don't know if opposing teams really know this. He doesn't really run to the outside anymore. They run out of sidecar, even with their slower set of backs. They're doing a forward facing mesh point instead of a side facing mesh point. And they also usually mix in jet motion or a counter or something that'll create additional obfuscation of where they're headed. But Lamar running right up the middle has been where he's been really effective since really the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, that's a lot of that power read and all that gap pulling guys and reading at the same time, where the back is the one that's going outside, but Lamar is the inside threat. Tough to stop.
But Hubbard has been a Raven killer of the past, of course, in a lot of different ways. But I don't really remember that being a read thing as much. But I'm interested to hear your thing, and now I'll be looking for it. So that's why I love these shows, is get a different perspective on the personnel for the opponents. Let's go through the linebackers a little bit. Sorry, not the linebackers, the secondary a little bit as well.
Yeah. Do you want me to do the off-ball guys, Logan Wilson?
Sure. We didn't talk about Logan Wilson yet. Yep.
Yeah. Logan Wilson, just ball magnet is the first thing that comes to my mind, because this past week didn't even make a great coverage play, but he just rips the ball out of the guy's hands after he catches it, and it's still within the time of it being an interception, not a fumble, because his butt was on the ground, so needed that. And this is how he's got this interception off Lamar, where he's – looks like he's rushing. If he's occupied, he seems to just drop off and try to get into a passing window. Does a great job reading eyes of the quarterback to get there. And if he's uncovered, he's rushing because nobody's blocking him, and quick pressure. But that's a interesting wrinkle that I think is specifically used with him because of his ability to read quarterback's eyes. And then the other two, Jermaine Pratt, not loved in Baltimore, I assume, from his comments, but he's having a pretty good year. For the first time, he struggled his first 2 years, but I think some of it's DJ Reader doing such a good job taking on two guys most of the time to keep his linebackers clean. But when he's able to just see the ball, read the ball, and make those plays, he can do that. And the other area that shines with him, he's an athletic guy, and when they use robot technique where they're going to fit the run and then see his play action, turn around and sprint and find that first crosser, he's saved two touchdowns so far. He ran stride for stride with Chase Claypool on one of those plays, which impressive. Akeem Davis Gaither is the athletic specimen, but he's pretty small, so they don't love him in their 3-4 base, but I assume he's going to get a lot of snaps if they're going to play their 4-3 base in this game. Fast. I wish he had hands. It seems like he drops so many interceptions, and his dad's a wide receiver coach, which really sticks out to me as the, why isn't he on the jugs machine more? You probably have one at home.
Pratt will be playing the will in a 3-4, if that is, and Logan Wilson, the mic, or the other way around.
Yeah. Pratt will be Logan Wilson at the mic.
Outstanding stuff. Let's move to the secondary now. And I apologize on the time limit here. We're trying to get through this.
Yeah, it's me. I'm long-winded. Chidobe Awuzie having a career year. I mentioned that. He's done a fantastic job, man and zone. doing everything, even being in a press position, he does a pretty good job, which I thought was a concern with his lack of, he didn't seem very long or very big. So I didn't think he'd be able to bully guys that much, but when he's in cover two and he's just hitting a guy, re-rabbing and trying to play the out of number two or sink vertical, he does a good job in there. On the other side, Trey Waynes is injured. Again, he's played two games in his Bengals career so far. It's going to probably be Eli Apple on the outside, which is not a name that will strike fear in many people. And he struggled early, but he's had some pretty good games the past couple of weeks. Jacksonville seemed like a turnaround game for him. He broke up a deep ball to Chenault and overall just played good coverage. In the nickels, Mike Hilton, very familiar, great blitzer, okay at coverage. He's a guy you can probably target if you isolate him, but he's not an extreme liability. He's just, that's not his forte. His forte is fitting the run and rushing the passer. Von Bell, similar, fitting the run, rushing the passer, and what he gives you in pass coverage, you'll take because it's just the added bonus on top for those guys, where Jesse Bates shines as well.
One thing I forgot to mention is, are the Bengals a committed nickel team at this point, or do they bring on a third safety to play that will spot during a dime back on third and long?
They'll bring they won't even bring him in. They'll move Von Bell to the box sometimes. It's 50-50 on when they do this. It's not all the time, but I like the three safety set they utilize. They bring in Ricardo Allen, and I think the reason hasn't been utilized as much as he got hurt, and now he's back, so we'll probably see it again. Bring him on and use him as a dime back, or really they like to start three safeties high and maybe start rolling one right before the snap or right on the snap. So they like to disguise that way.
I've not observed that. Another thing I'm going to be looking for in the game. So you don't start off with somebody who looks like a will linebacker, but he has a safety's number sitting in the box. You have three guys high and one rotates down.
Sometimes it's both. I don't know if I misspoke, but sometimes it'll just be Von Bell just sitting as the linebacker. But sometimes you won't see anybody. They have three safeties high and they start rotating one late. And whether that's Bell, sometimes it's Bates if they want him on a tight end, or they want him to play robber. And sometimes it's Ricardo Allen, who's kind of the versatile piece of that makes it work.
All right. Very, very interesting breakdown of all of this. Anything you expect in terms of defending Jackson in particular, but Brown and Andrews to a lesser degree, that you would expect the Bengals to do that they wouldn't do in another game?
Well, yeah, the 4-3 is one thing with that. They want those guys, they want as many linebackers, off-ball guys on the field as possible to try to flow with that and not get caught up along the line. Along with that, they last year played a lot more too high and quarters stuff against the Ravens than they did anybody else. It was, especially in that game they ran for 400 yards, it was over 70% quarters, and they were a team that ran that about 20% of the time. To go with those, I also would expect, I think they're going to bring slot blitzes, and this is something that I'm not positive about, but this is something I'm kind of thinking that it worked a little bit with Darius Phillips last year, and now they have Mike Hilton, so why wouldn't you try to bring some more of those? So I'd look for Mike Hilton coming off the edge sometimes. They do that, but I'm thinking they might do that a little bit more than normal just to speed up Lamar or try to get a quarterback hit, or really on those option plays, speed that up as well, where if it's a good give read, you got to give it now. You can't do any long extended mesh point.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. If you the shorter you can make that for Lamar to reduce his opportunity to read leverage, the better off you're going to be as a defense, you know, doing that. Okay, one player you think matches up really well, you can pick one on each side of the ball if you want. I don't do score predictions here, but one player on each side.
I think that Trey Hendrickson is going to match up well with Villanueva, and maybe that's me seeing the game last year with that. I saw Villanueva with Carl Lawson. that was a struggle, but I think he's going to match up well, specifically trying to rush the passer whenever that opportunity presents itself. And for the Ravens, to me, it's probably Mark Andrews matching up with, whether that's Von Bell or a linebacker in space. I think Mark Andrews is a very talented guy. And like you said, Lamar reads leverage very well. Well, that seam ball to Mark Andrews or things like that, where the guy's on him, but he's on the outside, so I'm going to throw it to the inside, things like that. I think that that combo is going to be very difficult for the Bengals to stop this week.
All right. Outstanding stuff, Mike. Really enjoyed this conversation. Enjoy hearing all this depth on the Bengals. Tell folks again where they can find your work.
Find me on Twitter at Bengals_Sands, and I promote everything there, writing or podcasting.
Okay. By the way, if you're a Ravens fan or if you're a fan of any team, take the time to develop 2 to 4 people that you follow on all the other divisional teams, at least, but probably all the AFC teams. And Mike would be a great one because he obviously knows his stuff very well. And I'm sure your tweets, and although I haven't really been watching them as closely as I'm going to, are at the same kind of level as what you've delivered here. And that's exactly the kind of guy I want on my notifications list coming through and on my regular feed.
Yeah, especially you could just follow and unfollow. There's going to be like 100 clips of this game that I post.
Okay, there you go. All right. Want to remind people, go out to filmstudybaltimore.com for the articles. Also, we're doing the 25 years series right now. If you have an idea for a piece of Ravens history that you'd like to talk about, we're not looking for Mount Rushmore. We're not looking for the top 10 at positions or anything like that. We are looking for these odd little things. You know, you really like Corey Ivey, we'll talk about him. If you really like Kelly Gregg and some particular aspect of his game, we'll talk about that. If you have a particular game you love, a particular story, traveling with the team, all of those are great topics for these historical pods. And I'd love to hear from you. Just hit me up by DM on Twitter. Mike, thanks again for joining us.
And thank you for having me. I enjoyed it a lot.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Stuff. We'll be right back.